These kids love life more than most kids. We have a doctor. All he sees are kids all day, and he's worked with lots of trisomy 18 kids over the years. And he has told us on numerous occasions that they're the happiest children that he sees.
Hello, I'm Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute, and I want to welcome you to a truly special program of Straight Talk on Life Issues.
And I'm your co-host, Victor Nieves. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. The month of March is Trisomy Awareness Month.
And boy, are we going to make you aware. Stick with us. This is a truly an inspirational program. About 1 in 150 babies are born with a chromosomal condition called trisomy. It's a genetic disorder where an individual has an extra chromosome in their cell.
When trisomy occurs, the individual is born with 3 of a particular chromosome instead of the usual 2, resulting in 47 total chromosomes instead of 46.
And the result of this extra chromosome can vary, but tend to manifest in the form of birth defects, variable health problems, and some of which can be quite severe.
We'll learn more today as we speak to our special guests on this topic. Joining us is Beverly Jacobson. When her daughter Verity was diagnosed with Edwards syndrome, or trisomy 18, a condition deemed quote-unquote incompatible with life, she was met with devastating words from medical professionals. Despite their dire predictions, Verity is now 8 years old and thriving. Having moved from heartache to hope, Beverly has made it her mission to help moms on this journey through her nonprofit ministry, Mama Bear Care. We're also joined by Brad and Jesse Smith. Their daughter Faith has trisomy 18 and is now 16 years old. Together, Brad and Jesse actively support parents with disabled children and help to connect them with doctors who support the lives of these precious kids.
So Beverly, Brad, and Jesse, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Well, let's start off with briefly telling us a little bit about yourself. Beverly, let's start with you.
I'm Beverly Jacobson. I'm married to an Air Force guy who's actually retired, and we have 9 children. And our 9th and our youngest is our little Verity, and she was diagnosed in utero with full trisomy 18. Which, like many moms that we've worked with, we had never heard of that condition before. And of course, went to Dr. Google, which is a terrible idea, I know now. But in, you know, when you hear those scary words and terms that you've never heard of before, and you're just trying to get some information and answers, you know, I saw the phrase incompatible with life popping up. The images that I was seeing initially were just really sad. There wasn't any hope given to us at the beginning. I will say we were not pressured to abort, but it was very clear from a couple of interactions that we had with doctors who were not our regular providers. But just the sense that we got that they were not valuing Verity's life the way we did. Abortion was never an option for us. And we kind of came to the table saying that and just wondering what kind of information they could give us. Anyways, that's a little bit about us.
Brad and Jesse, let's hear from you.
Well, I am Jesse. This is my husband, Brad. We have 5 children, and it's our youngest, Faith, who has trisomy 18. Very similar in the sense of, except we were pressured to abort.
Heavily.
So we went to a geneticist, said all the things that many of the families have heard, incompatible with life, fatal fetal anomaly. And when we said, just like you, we said unplanned, you know, just we want her and it's not an option to abort. He then, this geneticist, went on to pressure us, said it would ruin our family, our marriage, our finances. These are typical things that are said to families that find out about almost any disability. Really, I think what we found, which I found very surprising after having 4 healthy kids, is that the people that pressure for abortion are both ignorant and unwilling to help you even when they are born. And so it put us in this different world where I think G.K. Chesterton says it best, where he has this idea that sometimes you're in a battle, not because you hate anybody in front of you, but you're protecting the person behind you. And that has been our entire 16, almost 16 and a half, because of, just years of just constant battle to get people to provide the services that we are paying them for, by the way. So it's been a great journey. It definitely has put a little steel in our spines.
Well, I think it's very important to point out that doctors, other medical professionals paint such a dire picture that none of these children will live. And the fact is, which you all are going to verify, is that children live well into their lives, have a good life in the process.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, there's a challenge with it. I never tried. I work with lots of families, have for years. Mm-hmm. And I never try to make people think it's going to be easy. No, it's not. It's not going to be easy. I'll guarantee you that. But it'll be worth it.
Yes.
And it will change your life and make you stronger. Mm-hmm. And so I always am very honest with people, the challenge that you have before you. But it's like any challenge. If you embrace it, it makes you stronger.
Yes.
And if you don't, that's when it can crush you.
Yes.
And so we walk with them and help them. And that's the key, is just embracing the challenge that we have. And these kids love life more than most kids. We have a doctor. All he sees are kids all day. And he's worked with lots of trisomy 18 kids over the years. And he has told us on numerous occasions that they're the happiest children that he sees.
Well said.
Well, I'd like to ask all of you this. Taking us back to that first moment when you found out that your daughters had trisomy 18, what were the emotions that initially ran through your head? Beverly?
Obviously, just overwhelmed with fear and dread and anxiety, depression. I had gone through two early miscarriages, and I thought that was hard. And this was just a whole other level. But by the time we got the diagnosis, I was almost halfway through the pregnancy. I was feeling her move. Her siblings were feeling her little kicks. And it was just such a paradox to feel that life inside of me and yet be told that she wasn't going to live. A specialty doctor that we met with, his first words to me were, "So you're here to talk about your retarded daughter," and went on to say that if she survived, the big if, then it would be a futile life and she would be a drain. This is quotes, a drain on the family mentally, emotionally, and financially. So like you guys attested to, I mean, he was just giving us all of his bullet points, saying that the siblings needed to have buy-in because it was going to ruin their lives otherwise. It was crushing to hear that. But at the same time, I look back at that and realize that was about 6 weeks or so after we had the diagnosis, and it represented a turning point for me, because all of a sudden I was that mama bear instinct. I was that fierce love that we have for our babies just came over me. And I confess, I didn't know what to say in the moment to him. It was a gut punch, not expecting a medical professional to say these awful things. But then when I got home and I was crying and processing and praying, "Lord, what do I do with this?" That's when my perspective shifted. And I realized we've named our daughter Verity for a reason. Verity means truth. And we just felt whatever her story was going to be, we didn't know how things were going to play out, but we just felt really called to speak to the truth of the value of all human life, because clearly we had to be her voice.
Brad and Jesse, how about you?
Well, I mean, when I heard, I started crying and Brad got mad. So I had to cut the appointment short because, they're saying your child doesn't have a life worth living. I think I would echo what Beverly said. Just my daughter was literally kicking and moving in my womb during an appointment where the geneticist is saying she's incompatible with life. And I'm thinking, well, not incompatible right now, though. And they still use that horrible phrase, which isn't
all the time
distinctly a medical diagnosis at all, a fatal fetal anomaly. I mean, she's 16. I guess we can get rid of fatal and fetal, right? But they're still saying that to moms at the beginning. And in fact, I talked to a mom who, during her first appointment, the doctor had scheduled for her for an abortion. She never asked for it. She didn't want it. I talked to her on the phone after, and she was so upset. She's like, they're making decisions and pushing you toward that already.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it really does. It's typically it's other parents that you connect with and can actually learn from. There are some good doctors now. We found good doctors that we connect. I connect parents with all the time, but it starts with connecting with other families. And for us, that was Rick and Karen Santorum, because their daughter Bella was about 7 months older than Faith, and is about 7 months older than Faith. And so we connected with them when I worked in radio, and it was their help that kind of shook us awake, shook me awake anyway. If there's one thing I found, you kind of have to have that moment where, it just gets all shaken up in your head and you got to grab a hold of it and go, you know what? I'm running with this thing. Yeah.
Well, Brad, your anger at that meeting is reflective of how God has wired the male brain to both provide for and yep. protect his offspring. Yep. So it's very understandable, the anger. Beverly, you did not have to face the abortion conversation with your physicians, right?
Correct.
I'd like to hear a little bit from Brad and Jesse specifically of what you had to endure when the A word came up.
Yeah, well, I will tell you, it's shocking to me that Beverly didn't have to face that. Mm-hmm. Almost every, that's really, really rare. Almost
as I've
every
learned.
Parent. Yeah, almost every parent has to face it. In fact, I just connected one of the families I'm working with, she's pregnant, with one of my doctors. And in his email back, he was connecting them with the fetal folks. He gave them a phone number and he warned her that they would bring up abortion, but that, you know, he did say they wouldn't pressure, but that they would bring it up and talk about it. But in most instances, parents that I talk to, it is a huge pressure. In fact, we know families where the woman, you know, a lot of times it's younger women where they do this. They had actually scheduled the doctor before they told them about the diagnosis.
Yes.
They scheduled the abortion appointment for them. I mean, it's scary the mm-hmm. pressure that they put on people.
In your collective experience, is there any point that a physician will shut up about pushing, enforcing abortion on patients? Is there any key way that you can interact with these so-called doctors to get them to stop?
I think that comes after you've already been through the shock. So you almost need somebody that's been through it because, look, when you've been through this and like the geneticist did to us, it's going to ruin your finances. It'll ruin your other children. She's going to be kind of like a vegetable, incompatible with life. You're in this like trauma situation, and they use those prenatal tests that are not very accurate in a lot of ways.
Like a flip of the coin in many ways.
Yeah. I mean, some of them are just 50%. You really might as well. I call them search and destroy missions because they keep on just to find disability and to push you toward abortion. And I think you don't get those words until later. But I usually say, this is Faith, I'm Jesse. I just want you to know starvation is not a medical treatment. Overdosing my daughter is not a medical treatment, and death is not her cure. And usually that separates the sheep from the goats.
It's because... great to see the reaction.
Yeah.
It's so funny to see how people react. And you get one of two reactions. You get either like, they can't believe you said that, and of course, this is your child. Or you get the, well, you know, not everybody feels the same way. It's a doctor speak, right? Try and soften everything. Make it sound nice that it's okay to kill somebody.
Yeah. The other thing I think you get a lot, it's one of those conversations with quality of life. And we've also developed something when a doctor talks about face quality of life. I have them stop because they have 150 years of studies from all over the world of physicians. And physicians have very high, out of almost any profession, very high suicide rate, depression rate, and substance abuse rates. Everybody in their field knows this. They work on it. And so people that do such great work in society and can't rightly identify the own quality of their own life, I feel are distinctly unqualified from saying the quality of life for anybody else. So usually when I take that statistic, because they have continuing education on this, and what did they do for fellow physicians? You know, when they think their quality of life is not good, they offer help, mentorship, time off sometimes, because this is a tough field. I will give them this. I've never seen a tougher field to work in. And so it's a tough profession, but there's nobody qualified to say that somebody's life isn't worth living.
Beverly, did you want to add anything to this?
I just love hearing from Brad and Jesse because honestly, they really inspired us at the beginning of our journey. We got to meet a trisomy conference and, you know, Jesse's one of those mama bears and she was into life, like in the groove. And I had a vision of what it might be like if Verity, you know, overcame those odds. And now Verity is 8, which might have been the age that Faith was when we first met at that conference. We have been so blessed that none of her caregivers, and we had, I mean, she has a very complex team at Children's Hospital here in Colorado Springs. Like those conversations don't come up here. So I don't know if it's just because they have followed her since she was 5 months old and we were assigned here with the Air Force. They have been on Team Verity from the beginning. However, we have worked with a number of our mamas to transfer teams. So, you know, you asked, when does that conversation about abortion stop? stop. Sometimes it stops when the mamas feel empowered because they've been given the support and the resources and the knowledge to realize they can push back and they can choose a different place to deliver and they can transfer, you know, care if they're not going to get the interventions at birth that they believe and want for their children, the same interventions that we would give to any other child. I realized during pregnancy, this might be a little bit different topic, but I read some research that actually having a prenatal diagnosis caused negative outcomes after birth, that it was almost better to not have the diagnosis. And then the doctors are treating that baby as any other child needing oxygen. Sure, let's give some respiratory support. Let's do a feeding tube, like not even questioning it. And I began to realize how what I felt knowledge was power, and I was thankful to know during the pregnancy so that I could prepare. I didn't realize that actually could work the opposite way. And then parents would have to fight even harder after birth.
I can tell you that actually happened with us. So we did not do testing in the womb. They pushed us to do an amniocentesis, and he kept saying it. He kept pushing, you know, I really think you should get the amniocentesis. And my wife had done the research. She's like, no, we don't want that. We're not going to do that. And so he kept pushing and pushing. That's when I finally stepped in and went, wait a minute, if we got the amniocentesis and you found out there was something wrong with her, could you help her? And he said, no.
Said no. And basically he was saying, and then Brad said, well, what would you do? You know, why would we need it if you can't help her in the womb with this testing? And he said to terminate. So that was why he did it. But it did help us afterwards until they found out, because we were given, Faith had large holes in her heart, VSD, ASD are very typical with trisomy 18 kids, and they're very treatable. Usually they're one and done, and they have a 90% success rate, which is better than most organ transplants at any hospital. Although it was presented to us as if it was, the doctor said they have a 10% chance more likely to die. So he didn't tell us it's a 90% successful. He said 10% more likely to die. So even the way information is given to you is skewed because your daughter has disability or your son has disability. But he was going to do it before he found out, before we got the testing. And so once we got the testing, the same doctor that's looked at her offered surgery. So we're on the road to do this. We've already had several appointments. And he brings the stack of paper, literally warm from the printer, because just so everybody knows, that's when a doctor has time to look at your file, as they're walking in the door. So just keep that in your mind that, you know, at this point, you have to have your ducks in a row, because they're probably just finding out what you have. And if you have a complex care kid, they don't know what your kid is like. But anyway, he walks in the door with this like literally hot stack and goes like, kind of like, do you know what she has? We knew by then. And then he said, well, you know, I don't know if we should do heart surgery, which he just explained to us how she would die from her own fluid filling her lungs with heart failure. And then said, but I don't know if we should do this. You'd have to go to an ethics board. I didn't want to beg anybody to do the job that I'm paying them to do, that they said my daughter needed to live well. And so we decided, my sister helped us find another doctor at a different institution. And that started a journey where we got some more care. And, you know, these are not all pro-life doctors, right? But you want a good one. Give me a cocky doctor who thinks they can do what nobody else can do. I'm in, you know, I don't care if they're pro-life, just do your job. And But we found out that having the diagnosis actually did not help Faith at that time. It was a reason for them to deny care.
Well, I would love it if you all could share some stories of how Verity and Faith have made a difference, not just in your life, but in the lives of those around them. Beverly?
Well, as I mentioned, Faith was an inspiration to us when Verity was tiny, and others in the trisomy community really brought hope. You know, that was our journey from heartache to hope, was realizing actually there are children living with this condition. And guess what? Their families are delighted with them, that they love them and that they have, you know, they bring this special, I'd say, quality of life to us because we get to live life with them and see things from a different perspective. And so just as we receive so much inspiration from other families, we have been told Verity has really brought hope to other mamas. Our ministry serves those with any kind of a prenatal diagnosis because, as you said, Jesse, you know, there's a lot of similarities as far as, you know, having to fight for fair care, but also from an emotional and mental and spiritual standpoint, just processing all of those emotions and digging through the information and really, you know, getting our, it may not be on paper, but I think we have a medical mama bear degree because we have to learn so much and advocate for our children. And I'm so grateful for those who have gone before us. You know, decades ago, these parents were told, you know, take her home and love her, you know, enjoy him while you have him. And there really was no support. And they really paved the way because they took their kids home and just kept loving them and doing what they could. And here they are some decades later. And so that has really, allowed us to build on what they have done, that foundation of, these are beautiful human beings. They bring so much to us. Our joke is everybody loves Verity. Everywhere we go, she's the little center of attention. Her classmates clamor to sit by her or to push her on the swing or go down the slide with her. They love her so much. And sometimes I say that we send Verity to school for them, not necessarily for her. Although, she's benefiting from the therapies there. But certainly our family, that doctor who said she would be a drain on us mentally, emotionally, and financially, I just, that could not be farther from the truth. I just wish that everybody could see these children for who they are. Verity has the hardest life of any Jacobson, and yet she's such a trooper. She works hard, she tries hard, she beams, she knows when she has done something great. We would all say it's definitely worth it.
Jesse, how about you? What stories can you share?
Well, I think one of the things, again, it's the exact opposite of what we were told, that it would ruin the lives of our other children. It created tough minds and soft hearts in my other children, which this world needs. And so her effect on us, look, Brad and I, we're selfish people. We needed to have children just to share our stuff, right? To be concerned more about other people. But Faith did something wonderful because she does go through some hard stuff, but she has a contentedness and a love for people that is unparalleled. And to my other kids, it's so funny as they've gotten older and they're adults and some of them have moved out. They're like, hey, don't worry. We all want faith, at whatever time, And but they did tell Brad and I we're on our own. So I thought that was so funny. But they are exactly the type of individuals that I was praying that God would help us bring up. And they're the type of people that know to go visit in the hospital. Let me tell you where people are suspiciously absent. In hospitals. And you find that, like, when you're there, people haven't been visited, not by their church, not by their family, not by, we talk about all these organizations, which I think Beverly alluded to. We kind of have this idea that there's, people that are different. We had all this DEI stuff. Well, it's not applying to actually the people that need it. I'm just going to say, I mean, you change a child who's 80 pounds and incontinent, where do you go? There's no changing table. I have a filthy floor of a bathroom if I have space. And I blue pad the floor and wave to all the people that come in and go, it's okay. I just need to change her. Or you go out to your van, in the middle of winter and fight the cold. But faith has brought a joy, a contentedness, and a realization to us that life is more than just being healthy as a gift, right? But there is something about people who are content no matter their circumstances, that love no matter what, and our world needs more of them.
Well, I want to thank you, all three of you, for what you've said during this time. You have given hope to so many people.
Thank you for helping to educate people.
Yes, thank you so much.
Victor, the topic alone, addressing children who have been labeled incompatible with life, sounds so negative, so depressing. But our guests today proved that that's not true. And they have proven that their children with trisomy thrive and teach those around them. I particularly like that they have impacted the siblings and how they have grown up to be empathetic and willing to jump in and help others. As Jesse and Brad said, they all want faith should something happen to them.
That's right. And, they also, not just the families, but they've impacted the medical community. We heard Brad and Jesse speak about the new innovations in the medical field that we've seen as a direct result of their child and how important it is for the medical community to actually try to treat these children. They're every bit as deserving as anyone else.
Yes, and treatments and clinics. They talked about various new clinics targeting treatment for these kinds of children. It's just amazing what God is doing through what is considered the ashes of their lives. He's doing such great work. And our guests had so much to share, so much uplifting, encouraging information that we are making it a part two program that you'll be able to hear next week. So join us for next week's program.
Well, and I also loved to hear, Brad, the mention from our guests, the importance Brad mentioned this, of the father being involved and being an advocate for their child and stepping in the gap, because these parents, they know their kids better than anyone else. And so to hear of the results of those parents stepping in, and then to hear of the community that they had that formed around them to help them through the struggles of life and help these families, I want to encourage you, our listener, to be one of those people who steps in the gap and is there for those when they need it. You can find resources to share with your friends, your family members, your community to help you help us defend life in every circumstance. Those will be available free to you on our website, lifeissues.org, where you can learn again. You can learn more about Trisomy 18 and get those resources to share them with the people around you. You can find that at lifeissues.org. Be sure to tune in next week for another Straight Talk on Life Issues.